How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello again, fellow basement dwellers, nerds of all kind, and good morning, Vietnam, here at Bandwagon Nerds. As it is, as my partners in crime today have gotten me up awfully early for undisclosed reasons to do Bandwagon Nerds at a shockingly early hour in the West Coast. But because I love these two guys, and because Patrick is helping his best friend out to work a wrestling show in Arizona, it's me and my two best buds, two of my best buds, here to give you another edition of Bandwagon Nerds today. I am joined today by the one and only, the man who orchestrated this ass crack at dawn episode of Bandwagon Nerds, the one and only PC Tunny. How you doing, Tunny? What's going on, man?
I'm great. We're doing this early because of oblong ball foot show reasons. That's why Ray and I, our teams have gigantic matchups at 1 o'clock Eastern. So I said, hey, Ray Cashington's original style, would you like to start the show around 10:30 our time? And he said, yes. And Dave, you agreed. I appreciate it. And let's have some fun this morning over some mimosas. What do you say?
Babe, my wife's here. Tutty wants to have mimosas this morning. Can you accommodate that? Or no? She's thinking about it.
Hi, Mrs. Lawyer.
Hi.
Ray said, hi, Mrs. Lawyer.
I am just getting up.
I don't know.
Mimosas okay. Might be doable.
Yeah, she's like, those might be doable. So
I have supplies. Oh, and 70th anniversary wild turkey, fresh from Costco.
Gum, gum, gum,
it's
gum,
yummy.
Yeah, she did. We did have some of that last night.
Ooh, I'm in.
Dave, I'll be there in about 4.5 hours.
All right. I'll come and pick you up. Come to the airport as I'm dropping the kids off on the plane to go back east. I'll just pick you up. It's perfect.
Two birds, one stone. That is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My kids are actually going back to Florida today. And my daughter, she's going back because she lives here, but my son's going with them for a week.
Ray leaves a note on his pillow for his girls that says, You're
on your own.
Went to live with Dave in California. I wish you all the best. I'll always love you. Don't call.
Gobble,
refrigerator,
gobble.
Refrigerator's full for a week and a half. After that, you're on your own.
You better learn quick.
Gobble, gobble. That voice you heard, of course, is the one and only, the Reverend Ray Cash, the 4,032nd. We're going to keep it down today, you know, because...
Bro, you ain't that's a Patrickism. You ain't got to do that. I'm just Ray.
All right. That's right. I'm not going to do it then.
Yeah, Patrick be trying to act like I'll be out there, man. Like, look, it's okay. I could be the original sometime.
Yeah, exactly. What is this? What? My wife's giving me ideas. Yeah, I'm not going to implement any new segments today. We got a streamlined show.
Jeez. Wait a minute.
What's the segment? We want to know now.
I'm curious.
Yeah, we want to know.
I mean, she's actually telling me something, an idea that we actually kind of do anyway. It's a segment on a deceased person who we love, who contributed so much to our nerdosphere, which we do every other week on the whole Happy Trails thing whenever somebody dies, which inevitably seems to happen every single week. But I don't think anybody died this week other than Mike Tyson's career. But
Do we want to make a fourth chair?
Have you talked about John Candy?
John Candy? What are you talking about?
He died?
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah, babe. I think you're up too. Okay, we got her up way too early, guys. Anyway, we'll think about something, but we are on a streamlined schedule today, so let's get this thing rolling here.
We're covering the series Game 7 on Amazon Prime, which is Amazon Prime's first kind of foray into the sports. And last week, of course, we covered the epic Game 7 in the 2003 ALCS between the Yankees and the Red Sox. This week, like you said, no hockey talk this week. Tony's going to figure that out. But it was a very hockey-centric episode of Game 7 here as they covered the 1987 Stanley Cup Finals, Game 7 between the Edmonton Oilers and the Philadelphia Flyers, which, I thought this is a cool episode for me because this is really when I started to get, a few years earlier, I'd gotten into hockey, and the Capitals had already broken my heart several times by this point in time, shit the bed. The Easter Marathon where they lost to the Islanders was still fresh in the minds of a lot of us. But, they talk a little bit in the episode about dynasties, right? And the late 70s into the early 80s of the NHL was all about dynasties. You had the Flyers who won back-to-back cups. Then the Canadiens went and won four in a row. And that's when I kind of came into hockey, right at the end of Montreal's run there. Was very into it for the Islanders winning four in a row. That team was dominant. And then, what's up?
Let me just say, before you move on from the Canadiens, they won 10 Stanley Cups from 65 to 79.
Yeah, they are, and they're, and it's not so ironic.
They're the Boston Celtics.
They're the Yankees. They're every bit as successful. I mean, they've got like 24 cups, you know. So the Yankees have like 27 World Series, and the Canadians have 24 cups. I think it's 27. They would have had 28 this year, except Garrett Cole couldn't cover first base. But that's another story. They weren't winning that series. and the Celtics have quite a few. I mean, what? Boston went 8 in a row. That's never been done before, something like that. But yeah, you had the Islanders who were winning 4 in a row. And somewhere along the way, as the Islanders are in the middle of this, there's like a mini merger. And this is just some additional information for you kids at home. There's a mini merger of the NHL and four teams that came from the World Hockey League. Winnipeg Jets, Quebec Nordiques, Edmonton Oilers, and Hartford Whalers were the fourth team. So they came in. Of course, the Whalers are no longer around. They are now the Carolina Hurricanes. The Nordiques turned into the Colorado Avalanche, and the rest is history. And Quebec's been trying to get a franchise back ever since then. But those four teams came to the NHL, and one of them was not like the others. We'll put it that way. The Edmonton Oilers had this 16-year-old kid by the name of Wayne Gretzky, who redefined everything you knew about hockey. And the Oilers were like very young, and I know they took on like the Islanders in, I think it was 84, 83 in the finals, and they got the shit kicked out of them. And then they came back for the rematch the next year. 83? What's that? Go ahead, Tony. You can talk. Okay.
It's 83.
Right. Because the Islanders won four in a row, they might have swept Edmonton in 83. Was it in five?
So the Islanders were so dominant. They beat the Flyers 4-2 in 80. They beat the North Stars 4-1 in 81. They swept Vancouver in 82. They swept Edmonton in 83. But Edmonton would come back to start their run of glory by ending the Islanders' run 4-1.
4-1. The Islanders won game one. Edmonton rattled off four in a row, and there was a changing of the guard. And this series kind of picks up at that point with Edmonton dethroning the Islanders, and then they come back the next year. They win the cup, their second consecutive cup, and there is a dynasty being born. And then poor Steve Smith. And they cover it, and I like the fact that they actually covered this. The only thing I didn't like about this episode is it wasn't very linear. There's a lot of jumping back and forth between things that happened and then trying to tie it into the present. And I think it kind of fell flat in a few places, but I was really glad that they covered the Steve Smith incident, because that was, if you weren't there and didn't remember it happening live, and you guys obviously probably did not, but I do remember Steve Smith putting the puck into his own net and just being absolutely crushed, you know, tears streaming down his face in the line. They showed all that. And it was cool that they showed the guys who were covering, doing the filming of the story of the Oilers and that sort of thing. But, I do want to turn it to you guys, because I don't want to monopolize the conversation at this point. This series and this game, probably before your guys' time, Patrick, I'm sure, remembered it pretty well. This probably was before either of your times. And I know you guys aren't like I know, Tony, you're a pretty big hockey fan. I don't know about Ray, but what were your takeaways in general of this episode before we kind of dig into a little bit more specifics about it? But Tony, why don't you go ahead and go first?
I was too young here. I mean, I'm like 6 years old, and we don't have a hockey team in Milwaukee. So growing up, I wasn't a huge hockey fan, probably till like the mid-90s after the Rangers won. But then even then until now, more so just a playoff hockey fan. I don't really have a team that I root for. I mean, I do root for Tampa Bay. I have liked them just because I think I won a bet when they won their first one in 05. But this is a fun piece of NHL history at this time. I think the coolest thing you mentioned, though, is that these guys are actually doing this documentary during this time in 86 and 87. Another thing to add to it is that Edmonton had beaten Philadelphia in 85 to win the cups.
In five games.
Really experienced heartbreak at the hands of the Oilers here, and they're thinking, man, maybe we got them figured out. Philadelphia had such a good team with so many players that could do a lot of different things. They matched up with the Oilers well. It was literally the two best teams in the league. We talked about the dynasty aspect. The Oilers will go on to win this one, the next one, and then again in 90 without Gretzky. And that would be the last time a team would win two out of three cups until the Blackhawks in 2017. So it's like kind of the end of a period of being very dynasty driven in the NHL to now where the next 30 years are going to be a lot of there's some back to backs, but it's a lot of hopping back and forth, which is really actually pretty good for the league. The league does flourish here with, you know, taking that momentum that Gretzky and Messier have. And, you know, look, they even both get to a Stanley Cup after leaving the Edmonton Oilers. But, yeah, this show really made Ron Hextall a star.
Yes.
And the fact that he won the Conn Smythe, he won it. You know, there's not a lot of people who have done that in any sport, let alone hockey. So, and I do believe they go on. Philly goes on with him at goal to win a cup, don't they, here?
They never.
No?
No. They haven't won a cup since 70. They go back, I don't think, with Hextall, though. Because, like, the next year, I remember real well, the Flyers blow a 3-1 lead to the Capitals and lose in Game 7 in overtime, one of the Caps' few successes. But I don't think Hextall makes it.
Is he still there in 97?
Who do they play? Jersey?
The Red Wings.
Oh, they got smoked by Detroit. No, I don't think he's there in 97. Maybe. But, you know, to tie in with, like, what you're saying, the interesting thing about this, at least the first half of the episode, is you get to see the perspective of a dynasty in making. Huh?
He was the goalie in 97.
Was he? Okay.
So he lost two in a matter of 10 years.
He wasn't what he was. In 97, he was not what he was anymore. I mean, yeah, and the thing about this episode is that what they, like I said, they show the context of a dynasty in the making right now, and kind of like dynasty in it. The guys who are filming the documentary assume Edmonton's going to win that third straight cup in that year when they lose to Calgary. And they keep filming for the next year and they do all that. And it's really fascinating to watch this dynasty in the making and to have them process such an unexpected defeat and to actually watch them go through it. And like halfway through the episode, I'm like, this is really good, a good context of what's going on with Edmonton. But what about Philadelphia? And then they flip and they give you the Philadelphia side of the story, which is equally important because of the whole Pelly Lindbergh tragedy and how Hextall became the guy because he replaced a legend in net. And Lindbergh was every bit as good as Hextall, if not better. But go ahead, Tony.
No, you can finish that thought. I was just going to add to the fact the difference in the teams almost really came down to health. Edmonton was healthy and Philly was really banged up.
Philly was really banged up. And I think, you know, Philly was the youngest team in all of sports, like they said. So they did have that as an advantage. But the Oilers weren't old guys. There were a lot of young guys you had. And I mean, you think about that team. You got Wayne Gretzky, you got Mark Messier, you got Jari Kurri, you got Grant Fuhr in goal. You got Paul Coffey on defense. That team was a juggernaut.
There's a number of other names that are on the second and third line of that team, too, that are really, really solid players that are maybe in the twilight or just the beginning of their career where they had a full team. Like, they had a really good 3-4 lines.
They did. And I think that some of the stuff that didn't get mentioned in, I mean, they mentioned it in passing late in the episode, but Edmonton was up 3-1 in this series and Philly won, you know, games 5 and 6. And of course, game 6, they did cover that the night the Spectrum shook. And like in game 5 and 6, Philly rallied from 2-0 down to win both of those games to force a game 7. And, you know, game 7 was unique because it's like, this is like the first series that they do where both goalies are wearing the full masks. Up until then, they weren't really doing the whole, like the cage sort of thing. I think Wah the year before for Montreal was the first one to really use that kind of thing.
Small smattering of guys not wearing a helmet too. So it might be one of the last years of not wearing a helmet either.
Yeah. You still got some of the old guard who are like, hell no, I'm not going to do that thing. And that's going to end pretty quickly. But, you know, the other thing about this game is Philly gets this rare 2-man advantage in the first minute of the game. And they take advantage of it as they should to go up 1-0. And then, but from that point on, I don't know if it comes through so well in this, but Edmonton really imposed their will on Philadelphia, who I think kind of like when you look like last year when we had the whole Florida Panthers, Edmonton Oilers, ironically enough, series. And that one was Edmonton coming back from 3-0 down to force a game 7 and just kind of looked like they ran out of gas in that last game. And that's kind of what Philly did, because what they don't show is like Philly got like 2 shots on goal in the second period and 1 in the third period. They were trying. They just couldn't do it. And it was obviously, and you get the sense of it, is such an intense game, physical game. These guys are really going at each other, but not a lot's happening until Anderson scores the goal that really breaks it open with like less than 3 minutes to go. And that delivers Edmonton their cup. So
I talk about the goal that put him ahead, though, I believe was a Gretzky assist where he told the coach there's a certain line that he knows he can get a shot for him. And he said, get open. And sure enough, he got in against that line that he wanted to of Philadelphia's defense, and they capitalized.
He was being shadowed by, I think, Howe and Crowley, I think. And it was a
dump and chase goal, too. Somebody else got control of the puck up against the boards, and they got it to Gretzky, and Gretzky knew exactly where he wanted to go with it.
Told Kurri to get open, and Jari fired a shot past Hextall to put them ahead to stay. But yeah, you know, and people who aren't into hockey don't understand, you know, the whole notion where the home team gets to make the last line change in the first and third. So you get to see who's out there and make your adjustments. And that was big because those guys had, even Wayne was talking about, you know, I really didn't have a lot of room to work. These guys really clamped down and took away everything I wanted to do until this moment where I was like, there's a brief window where they're not going to be on the ice where I can get the puck to Jari Kurri. He does. Edmonton wins, and it's an epic game 7, but I think the series was really the more epic part. Game 7 may have fell a little bit flat, but not from the intensity standpoint, just the fact that nobody was really able to do much because the other side was shutting them down so much. But It was a really cool episode. It's been a long time since I went back to 87 and thought about the Edmonton Oilers at the peak of their dynasty. And of course, you know, Wayne is in the news now because Ovechkin is chasing down that record and that sort of thing. But I really like the episode. It's tough to encapsulate a full everything that was going on in this series, of which there was a lot. And like you mentioned, the 85 series where Philly really got steamrolled. And they learned a lot from that, and they were able to make a much more competitive series. But anyway, I know Ray's busy at the moment. You got any final thoughts on this one, Tony?
Just another good installment here. I had no idea really about the depth of what was going on in this series, so it was a nice look back at a really fun time in culture of the 80s for the NHL. And Gretzky kind of. It was fun to listen to him at the beginning talk about how he was such a fan of Bird and Magic and how much fun it looked like they were having playing their sport. And he just wanted to do that. And he knew that since he wasn't big, he had to be smart. And his intellect showed through what we just talked about, him making sure he was, on a line that was changed over against a certain shift for the other team. So just things like that, you know, it's luck is definitely opportunity meets preparation, and there was an opportunity. Gretzky was prepared and knew what to do with it. So you can call it luck, or you can just call it the great one.
Yeah, exactly. The great one indeed. I mean, it was, just an excellent series. And like you're saying, Edmonton is going to go on, but it's really, like you said, the end of an era. Canadian hockey teams are still dominating the NHL at this point, you know, and I mean, I know by modern standards, that's like hard to fathom because no Canadian team has won the cup since 93. But there's a time frame where you're thinking about the teams that are dominating, you know, other than the Islanders wedged in there. It's all Canadian teams, right? It's four in a row for Edmonton. Calgary, the year that Steve Smith, you know, accidentally eliminated his team. They go to play Montreal. The Canadians win. And then Edmonton runs off a couple more. And then I think
88, 90.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the Penguins start to, and then, you know, once you get to 93, the Penguins start to, good stuff. So the next episode looks like they're covering the Dallas Mavericks, San Antonio Spurs game 7 from 2006. So that'll be cool. Cause I don't remember a ton about that series other than that the Spurs were really good.
It's pretty epic series, Western Conference Finals. Yeah, it's one of the great Western Conference Finals of all time.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be looking forward to going back to visiting that. So I know we've got that. You got the Cubs Indians. You got, like you said, the Game 7 between the Rangers and Canucks, 94.
Yep.
So we'll get to see more of Mark Messier. But yeah, I think, you know, when you think of Messier, you kind of forget, oh yeah, he was part of the Oilers. I mean, at that point in time, because you think of the Rangers triumph and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, another good episode. Game 7 is a fun series. They're doing a good job with these shorter episodes. I mean, they could easily make them twice as long, but they don't, and that's all right. So I think on that note, Tony, until we get Ray back in here, we will go ahead and take our first commercial break. We are listening, you're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of the Chairshot.com. And we'll be right back after this brief commercial break.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And don't forget, this holiday season, head on over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Plenty of great designs. Makes a great gift as well. You don't have to get it in just a t-shirt. It can be a tank top, long sleeve, or a hoodie. That's prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Now, back to Dave Ungar.
Make sure you get your chairshot.com wife beater for the holidays. That's right, kids.
The thoughts and words of Dave Ungar are not necessarily representative of thechairshot.com.
Or they might be. You never know. So that's the thing. So we got an interesting trailer park this week, kind of a light week for trailers. We got a couple to talk about. I think what I want to do is start off, and I did this kind of as far as I can tell chronologically as to what's coming, but we talked about it a couple weeks ago that out of nowhere, sort of like an RKO. Oh, there's the first wrestling reference. We mentioned Patrick's. But a few weeks ago, we mentioned out of nowhere that What If season 3 was coming. And it's like, wow, I heard that it was happening, but I didn't realize they were that far into it. And the next thing you know, here's the first trailer for What If. And there's a lot of stuff going on in this trailer. It looks like the Watchers might be more involved. And it's not just our friend, and I wish Ray was here to remind me what his, I know Ray's here, but he's busy at the moment. I forget the guy's name, who's the main watcher. Damn it. Ray will remind me what it is. But
Jeffrey Rush.
What?
Jeffrey Wright.
Who's he playing?
Jeffrey Wright is the watcher.
Right. I mean, the watcher's got, isn't there a name, a specific name for that watcher?
I don't know. It's just the watcher.
All right, Ray will get on. He'll. But it's so you've got that. You've got, of course, more zombies because we know Marvel.
Raza Alwazar.
I don't know. Alwazar, maybe something like that. I forget. Oh no, it's a name. I'll look it up when we talk about it. But Tony, what did you think of this trailer? I'll go to you first as to what your thoughts were on because there's a lot of stuff going on and. It's a big trailer to kind of digest. Like I said, there's zombies. There looks like Shang-Chi in the great old West. Storm is kind of like merged with Thor, the goddess of thunder, near the end of this thing. So you got some X-Men action going on. This is going to be the last season, as far as we know, of What If. But Uatu, that's the, I fucking knew it was going to come to me eventually. Uatu is the watcher who he's playing. I didn't even have to look it up, Tony. It just kind of jumped into my brain there. So, I know it's weird how things work.
I'm proud of you.
Thanks. I'm glad somebody is. But yeah, what'd you see in this trailer that has you interested? Because there's a lot of stuff going on.
There is. It reminds me I need to finish watching season 2, and in doing so, I think the time period I have from now until this comes out, I can probably just go back and rewatch season 1 and finish, you know, start at the beginning of season 2 and watch all of them again. The trailer made me think like they're actually really going somewhere with it. They're really going to round out the story and connect everything together. So I'm kind of excited for that. And it's fun because they don't really have a lot of rules. It's a what if kind of thing, right? So they can do whatever they need to do. I thought they've done a great job with the stories and everything else as well. I believe I read this last time we talked about this, but episodes this season include a Red Guardian centered episode written by Bradley, also featuring that. Bucky Barnes, Bill Foster, and Ranger Morales. An anime-inspired episode featuring the Avengers piloting mechs.
Right, and that's one where Sam Wilson says, and it's interesting because it's not Avengers Assemble, it is Avenger Assemble. So it's like right. It's like a silver samurai sort of being that's, I guess, going to be called the Mighty, I don't know, it could be called the Mighty Avenger. Maybe that's what, there we go. I think Ray's got his headset on. Ray, Watcher from What If. You missed the game 7, but isn't it Uatu's the name of Jeffrey Wright's character, right?
Uatu, yeah.
So we're talking about the What If trailer, and kind of all the stuff that's going on in there. And Tony was reading some of the a lot going on in this trailer. And like Tony's saying, you got a Red Guardian episode. You've got some sort of Avenger being assembled, not plural. You've got Shang-Chi looks like he's in the Old West. You've got
Cowboy. Yep.
Monica Rambeau, Moon Knight, Shuri. There's an Agatha Harkness musical number in one of the episodes. Oh, and you already mentioned the Western-themed episode with Shang-Chi and Kate Bishop.
And the episode with Kahori, who's supposed to be the Native American new superhero that they created.
Oh yeah, in episode or season two. Sorry, yeah, she was in there, and yeah, so she'll be a big part of this whole thing. But Ray, I'll go to you. Tony's been commenting on it. What are you seeing in this trailer that has you excited? And do you think there's like some continuity going on here between this last season of What If and whatever? Because like there are a Watu's there, but there's other Watchers as well, and we see that.
Well, so the Watchers are there are a ton of Watchers. As I mean, to still. The idea from DC and the Guardians, there's a Watcher for like every world or every sector, however you want to split it up. A Watchu is the only Watcher that actually feels compelled to get involved. And that's why he's the one, it's always been this one that they tell the stories of the Watchers with. But the interesting thing to me about this entire season and show is that this is the last season.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right. What's interesting to me.
Right. I mean, presumably, I guess they could always change their mind. But yeah, that's the idea that this is the end of the road for What If. And you know, it's been a fun run. It's been it's a fun series just to explore some different stuff and kind of give them a blank slate to play with. It looks like we're going to have more zombies, which is fine because we're going to have a whole Marvel zombie show is coming up. And so there's going to be, obviously they're doing something with that, but yeah, I'll be interested to see if there's any sort of, because we have seen elements, like we've said before, elements of What If has bled over into the MCU. Dark Strange is the most notable one, that sort of thing. But and we've often speculated on this show, is it canon? You know, is What If canon? And that's a big debate because some people say yes. Most people say not really.
I don't think it's canon.
I tend to not think so either. Does that mean they couldn't use What If to introduce something into the canon? Probably not. I mean, I think that all bets are off, but...
Well, the one opportunity for that is Kahori. If she becomes a real live-action superhero, then that's the one thing you can say is, okay, well, they made a character canon.
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, it's coming December 22nd, so we are not far off at all from that, and that's kind of like Disney Plus's Christmas present to us. Is like, here you go, guys. We've got something for you. Here is... you know, another season of What If. Thank you, Disney overlords, for helping us out there. We really appreciate that. Let's move on. Tony, you got any final thoughts on What If?
The final season of What If, by the way.
Yes, the final season of What If, as unless, you know, unless it like does Tyson Paul numbers and they decide, hey, you know what, let's go back for a season 4. I don't see it doing that, but you never know. A couple of weeks ago, we got a sizzle reel for Max. And then we kind of got a little bit of an expanded sizzle reel for Max for 2025 this past week. It looks interesting. Some of our shows are on there, notably The Last of Us Season 2, which I know Ray and I are quite excited about. We don't know when it's coming, but it sure looks like Bella is going to have a showdown of sorts with Joel about what he did.
She mugged the shit out of him.
Yeah. Yeah, at the end of whatever happened at the end of season 1 is going to get in there, but we got a little bit of a something for Peacemaker season 2, which is extremely welcome news for all of us. There's other shows and other things that Max is doing. You know, White Lotus, I don't watch. I hear a lot of good things about it, but they put a lot of stuff into this trailer, probably 5, 6, 7 different sort of shows. Tony, I'll go to you first. Anything in other than, of course, Peacemaker, which I know we're all excited about, a season 2. Yes, please. Forgot to mention Creature Commandos was noted in the sizzle reel as well. That is coming in December. Ray is not a fan. We understand that, Ray. but Tony and I probably are going to check it out. But PC, what did you see in there that anything else from the sizzle reel that kind of got you interested?
Well, I think the biggest thing, especially being, you know, Game of Thrones fans, is we learn that Sir Duncan the Tall is the knight that we're following here in this brand new series, a.k.a. the Hedge Knight. He served as a knight during the reigns of King Daeron II, Aerys I, Maekar I, and most importantly, Aegon V, Aegon Targaryen. So it's going to be a really fun this new series. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really intrigued that they chose this to be the main character and the storytelling of how they're going to do this one. So I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, there's there's Ray showing the Bella mean mugging Joel there in the trailer. Yeah. Okay. So getting back to what you're saying, I've actually read the prequel, like the graphic novel, or like they did a digital version of the whole Hedge Knight story. And that's really fascinating. Duncan, the Hedge Knight, who they kind of call him. Yeah. They call him Dunk. And he kind of comes out of nowhere to be this badass, just this epitome of badassery, you know, and I'm really looking forward to it because, yeah, give me more Game of Thrones stuff. Hey, Tony, by the way, I'm getting closer to season 8, buddy. And my trepidation is that season 7 is so fucking good that to realize that they shit the bed kind of in season 8 makes me less than enthused to get there. But I'll get there for you, buddy. I promise. Anyway, Ray, what else did you see in this trailer, this sizzle reel for Max coming in 2025?
So, one thing that I love about WBD, I hate them, right? We hate them. They've shown themselves to be a terrible entity business-wise. But I've loved forever, and HBO's been lauded forever for their ability to make and find some of the most new and up-and-coming and cool and amazing stories and shows to do. So I like the idea of how many new shows are coming. One of them particularly stars Mark Ruffalo. Yeah. So if you can get Ruffalo to come back to TV, that means you threw some money at my boy because he's a superstar, like Oscar-level guy now. So that looks interesting. Of course, I'm here for Peacemaker. Of course, I'm here for Last of Us and all of the heavy hitters and all
and,
that.
And Creature Commandos, too. We know you're here for that.
I'm going to watch it. I'm going to hate watch it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. But I'm definitely going to watch it. Like, I may not be enthused, but I'm very intrigued. Very intrigued.
I mean, you got to kind of go in with an open mind a little bit. I understand your inclination to say, this is the wrong direction, and I get it. But I think all of us are going to go into that series with an open mind and say, well, let's see what James has in store. I mean, I agree with you, and I think Tony would probably echo this. I do agree that it seems like an odd place to start a universe with Creature Commandos. It's like, that is a unique choice. That is a choice, James. What do you have up your sleeve? What about this series is going to lead? It makes this the kickoff of the DCEU because Gunn is not stupid and he's got something up his sleeve, something that he's seen. And this is where he went for whatever reason. So while I share your sentiments, I do about, well, shouldn't we have maybe started here? I applaud him for thinking outside the box and going in a direction that we're not anticipating. And that's okay. Bring it on. We are only a few weeks away from that, right? December 13th.
If the only issue was that it's a weird way to start, I wouldn't have a problem with it. It's not just that it's a weird place to start, but it's you're biting something that we've had two full. You're blatantly. While I understand this is a entity that's existed for however long, right? I know you didn't make this up. But it's the Suicide Squad with monsters and cartoon and animation. Like, it's just, and it's so soon. Had you done this 5 years later, it would have been enough time where we've been like, oh, okay, this is different. And we don't need to relitigate because we got other stuff to get to. But yeah, just not enthused at all.
I'm going to impose double jeopardy. You can't be tried twice for the same crime, Ray. Just, you know, I'm going to throw that out there for you, buddy. So there you go. No relitigating. Tony,
that sounds like something a lawyer would do.
Go figure. It's weird how things work out that way on this show sometimes. Tony, Creature Commandos is I think one of the ones we're looking at. I know you're kind of like, are you looking forward to it? Are you in Ray's camp? Are you kind of middle in the road as far as your feelings about this kickoff to the new DCU?
I'm rather indifferent. I'm just kind of probably having a little bit higher expectations, a little bit more hope for it than Ray does, but we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm open to that. They're starting over no matter what, and that's where they're starting, and I want it to be good, so I'm going to just keep an open mind and check it out. And, you know, the interesting thing, too, is there's going to be a lot of crossover. We've speculated and heard a little bit of this kind of confirmed that people who play these characters in animation are likely to be the ones to play the same thing in the movies. So maybe it's not necessarily establishing a starting point storyline wise, as opposed to like some tertiary characters that are going to be even interwoven in really important ways in important stories over the next, you know, 5 to 8 years.
Well, look, anything that says continuity and as far as the DC universe is concerned is a good thing. So that's encouraging. So we'll see what happens there. Next trailer we got is the return of one Cameron Diaz to the silver screen. She looks great. I'll say that. And she looks $1 million in this trailer. Back in action, her and Jamie Foxx. This is coming January 17th, 2025. I know I put 2024. It's 2025. Sorry. You guys know what I'm doing. I know. I suck. But I can't do rundowns like Patrick. You know, I just you know, throw me under the, I'll throw myself under the bus. But
listen, it was there for me when I was eating breakfast this morning.
See?
So
I mean, there you go. That counts. And I was doing that really late at night just for you, Tony, and for you too, Ray, because I love you guys.
Preach.
Jamie Foxx and Cameron Diaz are apparently ex-CIA operatives who have gone into the quiet life. You know, so they've raised their kids. This is kind of a plot that I think we've seen in other places before. And then you've got something that drags them both out. And there are some funny elements in the trailer, like the kid saying, God, I never knew my parents were so cool to be CIA operatives. And they're like, oh, that's not why we're cool. And that sort of thing. But I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think about this one? Is it you guys in on this one? Are you not in on this? What do you think? Tony, I'll go to you first.
I mean, it looks like a fun, kind of humorous action flick. Welcome back, Cameron Diaz. You know, it's been 10 years. Having Jamie Foxx in it, I think, makes it even more so that I'd like to see it, because I think their chemistry can be really good. I think it's an interesting role for them to play. They're not young anymore, right? They both still look great, yeah. But they're not young. I mean, is Jamie 60 now? Cameron's definitely in her mid-50s at the worst. I would think so, but this looks fun, and hopefully all the action is really well done. I think that's what could make this an even more enjoyable movie. What do you think, Ray?
I think the right person got her to come out of retirement.
She's 52.
Because Cameron and yeah,
okay,
that makes sense. Cameron and Jamie have always been close. So that makes a lot of sense from that perspective. I think it is the perfect Netflix movie in that it looks fun. It looks like it's something I'll watch, and I'll probably never watch it again.
Jamie Foxx is only 56.
Yeah,
sorry.
56. Tony's already putting him in the grave. Look at it.
the only thing about the movie that I just want Hollywood to just have better plots. Like, we've seen the parents are CIA agents are warring against each other, warring together, like
True Lies. Anyone?
Well, you say yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and not just the one with Brad and Angelina, but the show they had on with Donald Glover and the other young lady's name who escapes me right now. Look, I'm with it. Cool. I'm happy that she's back getting them checks. Keep getting them checks. But I would really like to see some more. Excuse me, some more individuality and some, like, can we just be smart about this, dog?
Wait, hold on. Ray, are you saying you want an original storyline? Is that what I'm hearing from Raymond?
It sounds kind of crazy. I know, right? it's a little weird, but yes,
I applaud,
but I'm going to watch it.
I applaud you for the bravery of suggesting such transgressions against the Hollywood protocol right now, Ray. But
your boy on a limb, I know. I'm out here in the island by myself. Yeah.
I'm going to call you Oahu. You're out there so much by yourself, man.
That was cute. I like that.
There was another trailer I didn't include simply because if I remember correctly, none of us are watching this. They had the final trailer for the last Mission Impossible. And I know I haven't been keeping up to it. Tony, have you been keeping up to it on the Mission Impossible series?
No, this is where we would benefit from DPP being here, but I am not a Mission Impossible guy. I have not seen any of the Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah, Ray, I forget. Are you a Mission Impossible? So, and that's why I left it off, because it's like we've done this a few times in the past where we do a trailer, no one's watching, and it just becomes an awkward conversation. And it's like the Spider-Man meme. Everybody's pointing. Have you watched it? No, I haven't watched it. I don't know what the hell. So I left that off, but. I did include.
It's supposed to be a big deal, though, that Angela Bassett's supposed to be back.
Don't get me wrong.
I didn't know she was in that.
I want to watch it. I just haven't watched it since, like, the first one, which was really good. I think everybody watched the first one with Tom Cruise hovering above the security floor. And this, you know, the little bead of sweat is about to set off. And Ray's like, no, I didn't watch that shit either. So
I've seen the memes. Yeah. I've seen the clips, but I've never watched the movie.
I did include a trailer of a different sort, though, because Patrick shared this, because, as you know, Patrick and I are big theme park fans. And, you know, my kids, like I said earlier, my daughter's going to Florida, or she lives in Florida. My son's going out there to visit. He's going to do a lot of the Disney parks, that sort of thing. Ray is doing something. I don't know. What is this?
Yes, yeah. You got to remember the video is very small. You can't see the whole thing. But yes, Jenny.
I got you. And we got a trailer of sorts for the third theme park opening in Universal Florida, Epic Adventures. And it's all about kind of the portals. And that's kind of the theme of this new theme park, is portals to these different lands. And there's five distinct lands that are opening at this theme park. And you got Harry Potter and the Ministry of Magic. You've got a celestial thing. You've got the Monsterverse, that sort of thing. You got Super Mario Land, which we've had out here in California for a couple of years now. And then there's a fifth one, and I'm drawing a blank as to what the fifth
it is. Burke, the How to Train Your Dragon.
Yes. So you've got these five.
And the celestial thing is Celestial Park, which is basically like the main part of the park.
Right. Right. So you've got these five distinct parks, all of it opening in May of 2025, which is pretty quick. Some of it I really love. I love the Harry Potter thing. The only thing that I don't like about it is what I did is I looked at it, and if you go to the main Universal park, there's two aspects of Harry Potter land, I'll call it, you know, and they're connected by, you get on a train, that's the Hogwarts Express, and it's a ingenious illusion that they pull on you that connects these two parks, that you sit in this train, and then it's like it creates the illusion that you're actually traveling. You're really maybe going, I don't know, not very far at all. But this one's too far away to pull that off. So, but that's okay, because everything Universal does with Harry Potter is phenomenal. And this looks like it'll be no different. The Monsterverse, with all those monsters and the animatronics that are next level, next generation, is going to be phenomenal. The Dragon, Super Mario, I'd like to check out the Super Mario stuff, but I could go down the street if I really wanted to do that and see what's up. But Ray, you were yesing, so I'll go to you first.
Yes.
On this one.
First and foremost, because of our ages, we all can appreciate the Dark Universe with all the monsters. We can appreciate the Nintendo World, not Mario World, but Nintendo World, important to note, because we grew up playing that. And we all can appreciate Harry Potter because that was old enough with that our generation. And, well, definitely my generation, but I'm sure you and Patrick, y'all read the books, whatever. Do not sleep on the popularity of How to Train Your Dragon. As a parent of kids 18 and younger, those movies made billions of dollars totality of the movies, the merch, everything. And so the idea of a world where you can literally fly dragons is going to be crazy, right? And of course, these parks are really for kids anyway, right? It would make sense for something to really be specifically for the kids of today. Because yes, Mario games and the Mario movie, which was fantastic, by the way, I loved, are a big deal. But most kids aren't, like a lot of kids in this generation are going to know it, but it's not going to resonate like it would with us if we were when we were kids. You know, when the original Super Mario's came out on Nintendo, Super Nintendo, or even Mario 64, right? Harry Potter, if this was 2005 and that world came out, it'd be the biggest thing in the world, right? We've had a little time now. It's still big. Also, they also made sure to say it's the Wizarding World. So the New York is going to be there, and Paris is going to... Paris, I'm sorry, with the Fantastic Beasts and all that, right? But for the kids now, I'm telling you, going to the Isle of Burke is going to be what... That's probably going to be the busiest park. But I just think it's so dope. And that's why I've always loved Universal in general, because they have the ability to use those IPs that people don't think about. You know, everybody's so busy because Disney owns the world. Well, Universal got their own little corner, and they got a lot to throw out there.
And in Florida, it's different. In Florida, Universal still has the rights to a lot of these characters like Spider-Man, like the Hulk, a lot of these Marvel characters that out here on the West Coast, it's all Disney. But due to licensing arrangements and stuff like that, you know, that's why you've got a Hulk roller coaster at Universal Studios in Florida. That's why you got some Spider-Man stuff over there. So it's an interesting dynamic, to be sure. But, you know, Patrick and I, before I turn it over to Tunney, have contemplated, and we've discussed kind of privately that that Universal kind of called Disney's hand on this thing. When Universal came out and said, we got a third park, it's coming in 2025, then all of a sudden, Disney started doing this, like out here in Anaheim, the Disney Forward sort of thing, the expansion of Disneyland. They're adding a several themed lands to Magic Kingdom now, or not Magic Kingdom, but Disney World in general. So, yeah, Universal kind of took the lead and took the bull by the horns, and for the first time in a very, very long time, Disney had to react. So it's very interesting. Tony, what do you think? I mean, are you ready to go to Florida? Are we ready to go down to Florida and hang out at the new park?
I have 2 points that you guys have kind of made, but I want to make them like a little bit broader statement. You just kind of hit on one of them where some healthy competition between Disney and Universal in this park going space is really good for park goers, right? And we're seeing that, and we've been seeing it recently, and we're going to continue to see it. You know, the other thing, the Nintendo World thing looks really cool for me, is the coolest thing, right? Hits me pretty hard. But you guys also talked about Ray, like, you know, this is kids and adults, and basically this sales pitch commercial for, you know, these, you know, experiencing these different worlds, you know, down there, hits with both adults and kids. It was really well done. So well executed. It looks super fun. I love the kid jumping into the portal and then coming back and bringing the family with her. Right. Yeah. It was so well done, and they all look really good. And like I said, you have high expectations, and you're most likely to have those expectations met considering the healthy rivalry right now that we mentioned between Disney and Universal, each pushing each other to make an experience even greater for park goers.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going at getting out there and checking it out if I can. We'll see what happens in the next 6 to 8 months. But that brings us to the end of the trailer park. We didn't even have any banjos. I'll have to put some banjos in there somewhere, Tony. I know. It's this 8:30 start time you guys got me. I'm like, oh, fuck, man. I'm just like not thinking. It's like me forgetting the dark match on the Big Five project. You know, it's something like that. But we are going to take our second commercial break. We're going to come back and cover a little news around the nerdosphere, and then get these fellas out of here so they can watch their teams play. But yeah, we'll talk more. Star Wars has no clue what the hell they're doing when we come back from this second commercial break. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com. Bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And we are back with more fun times here on Bandwagon Nerds on this early morning edition. For you guys, you'll never know. But, you know, for the rest of us actually doing this live and in kayfabe land.
They're all early morning. They're all 5 a.m. Eastern, Monday morning early edition. So just be lucky Sunday morning, all right?
Just pretend it's Sunday morning. It got some interesting news about Gladiator 2, of course. Is it out yet? I know it's getting really strong reviews.
No, that's next weekend with Wicked as well.
Okay. But one
and then
of
the weekend after that is Moana 2. It's going to be a crazy couple of weeks in
welcome
theaters.
To the holiday season. Yeah.
The holiday film season has started next week. Well, and we got a lot of good ones out right now, too. So, yeah. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Exactly. One of the stars from Gladiator 2, Denzel Washington, made a little bit of a buzz this week. Kind of speaking a little tongue in cheek that had a lot of people thinking he was saying he's retiring. He has since debunked that rumor and said, no, that's not what I meant. But one thing he did mention is that he is tabbed for a role in Black Panther 3, which none of us even knew was happening. So, you know, I mean,
we knew what 3 was coming.
We
come on,
kind of suspect, but nothing's been confirmed. You know, Ryan Coogler, we knew that was going, but I mean, it's not on the release calendar. Right? I mean, they've got the Eyes of Wakanda's on there, but Black Panther 3 is not. What's up, Tony?
Dave, out of all the properties that they have, that Disney has of Marvel and in the MCU and the storytelling they've been doing, we are definitely getting another Black Panther movie.
Well, it's confirmed now in a roundabout sort of way.
We all thought that it was going to happen to Ray's point.
To Tony's point, I would bet every ounce of money Jeff Bezos has that there's a better chance of us getting a new Black Panther 3 and a new Shang-Chi movie than even a new Avengers movie. Because if they cut those franchises off, it's over for them. It's curtains, son.
Right, right. But Denzel's going to be in Black Panther 3. Any ideas what role he might be playing? Ray, you're the big, you know, a big Wakanda fan. What do you think? Where could Denzel show up as far as the story? I'm not completely versed on the Black Panther lore, but, and sure, especially now when we're living in this world where T'Challa's gone, Shuri's still there. Who knows what's going to happen with the multiverse, but we do have, you know, T'Challa's kid running around somewhere, if I remember correctly.
Yes. T'Challa Jr. Yeah.
T'Challa Jr. I don't know if that's his name, but it's as good as any, Ray. Where do you think Denzel fits in this storyline?
So here's the thing. Denzel mentioned that the only reason this is news because he mentioned that Ryan Coogler is writing him a part. So that made me think, is this going to be a new character? But what instantly came to my mind is the original Panther guy, the original Panther, and a flashback of him. Because remember, the astral plane is a big thing in that Black Panther lore. So if it's a flashback of Wakanda and him being the original Panther, the name escapes me. I'll look it up. I'm sorry. But like, I can see that because Denzel has a very powerful, booming, king-like appearance. I mean, you can look at it if the role he's playing in Gladiator, Gladiator 2. So I can see that. Other than that, I tell you this, if my boy not Wakandan, what are we doing? would it be hilarious if he was just Benny Jackson from like New York?
Oh, no, I got it better. What if he's like, comes out and he's like looking at the whole landscape and says, my son works? He's from Zamunda. Now that would be
Yes, that's hilarious. The one thing I feel comfortable guaranteeing is this will not be a multi-picture deal.
No, I mean, he basically shot down the rumor he's retiring, but I think he is going to scale back. He's earned it. He's at that point in his career where he's like, all right, I've done enough. There's nothing left I can do. Yeah, maybe like T'Chaka's dad or something like that. You know, I could see like a flashback on the astral plane to like T'Challa or, you know, T'Chaka's ancestral something or other. I don't know. But Black Panther 3 is one of those movies that, okay, we all know it's coming, but boy, the storyline is going to be interesting because you've got multiple elements. You've got the Shuri element. You've got T'Challa Jr. We'll just go in that direction, Ray. I like that. And you've got Namor and whatever's going to happen with that whole situation if they're going to bring that back. But, Tony, what do you think, man? You got any speculation as to who Denzel could play? I know this whole Black Panther lore isn't your strong suit, but you got any ideas as to where they might be going with that?
No idea, but I don't even care because it's Denzel Washington. I think he's part of like a handful of actors that when they do something, we don't care what universe or genre they're entering because they're always doing whatever character they take on justice. And he's easily one of the people in that small group that still exists. And like we've talked about now for a while, it's not just a cool thing to do to be in these MCU, DCU, or Star Wars movies. It's like a bucket list thing for even the best of the best of the best who've been on film for the last 40 years, right? So we've seen it from a multitude of different actors. So I'm here for it. I'm definitely here for it, especially when the person doing the movie is specifically writing the part for you.
But Shinga is the original man that created Wakanda and was the first.
Not Bazinga, Tony.
Shinga. Cute. It's very cute.
Bazinga? Sheldon cute. Cooper?
Sheldon Cooper started Wakanda.
Sheldon Cooper's really white, Ray. I don't know if you knew this.
I bet Sheldon could have
He's actually South African.
He could unlock some of the secrets of vibranium. I'm sure Sheldon would have had a lot of fun with that.
Can you say the name again so I know what it is? I've never heard it before. I apologize. Bashira.
Bashira. No.
Bashira.
I thought yes. you said Bazinga. Is like Bazinga?
Wait. Yeah, no. That would be hilarious. Bashira, yes. So when the meteor hit, all the tribes who were around were like, what the fuck is this? And Bashira was the first guy to go in there and then everything. So he's the first Black Panther and the first ruler of what became Wakanda. So I can see him playing that role.
It's interesting. Bashira is the first Black Panther. Then you got Bagheera in the Jungle Book, who was a Black Panther, right? Wasn't he the Black Panther?
That is pretty good. Yeah.
It's I think Disney was reading some Marvel comics or something like that.
Oh no, I did say it wrong. It is Bashinga. I'm sorry.
All right. Now we're all confused. So okay, so Sheldon Cooper's true, back in play is what you're saying, right?
Not Bazinga, Bashinga.
It's just one letter. I mean, really, if you...
It's a few different letters. There's no Z.
What if Sheldon Cooper was the first Black Panther? Oh,
let's just move on from that. Bashinga.
Yeah, all right. We'll stick with that. We are going to move on from that because this is the Ray Cash part of the show here, kids. I'm going to give Ray the forum here because a couple of these stories directly relate to stuff Ray shared. And we need to have a conversation about the second one with the Fantastic Four thing. But Ray, you did the first one that it looks like Disney's done a bit of a detour, I would say, with the Hercules live action. Sure. And they've steered away from Hercules. And now it looks like it might be focused on Hades instead. And you were wondering what some of us thought about that. And then we got distracted with the Fantastic Four story. Go ahead. I cede the floor to you, sir, as to what are you thinking with this detour that Disney's taken, this redirection. Are you in favor of it, or what? I mean, because you asked what he thought, and I kind of, you know, superficially said, Ray, you already know what I think of just about every live action Disney remake, so I don't care.
And it's fair.
You're right.
And that's a fair take. I disagree.
I know.
But it's a very fair take because, you know, a lot of people are very nostalgic about these movies and seeing them redone, and in many places, many ways, not just redone, but the story tweaked a bit. I'm looking at you, Mufasa. It kind of makes it a little tough for people who ingested it at a very important time in their lives. So I'm with it. But if there was ever a movie to be done in live action, it was Hercules. It was built for live action. It was. Like, you know, we saw Hercules, MCU Hercules, shout out to my boy Roy Kent, Brett Goldstein, like for a second in Thor, Love and Thunder, and people lost their mind. Imagine what Disney proper could do with that movie. On top of that, one of the best parts about that movie was the chorus. Dog, all the singers we have now, can you imagine what that soundtrack and what that chorus could look like? There's so many, we have CGI now. We have the best imagery and ability to make CGI and things better than it's ever been. So all of I'm just imagining seeing the Titans and all this stuff. It could be amazing. Now, obviously, while Hercules is the character, the second most important character in this movie is Hades. And even if it was going with the original plot, right? Second most important guy. Because Hades is the big bad, but Hades is also, in a way, a bit of the narrator for a big part of the movie. Carries a lot of the movie. So I understand the idea of flipping it from his perspective, but we've had this trend in Hollywood where we are showing properties from the villain's perspective to make the villain sympathetic. Now, on a quick tangent, one thing Matt Reeves did with Penguin was that movie. Penguin is the protagonist. It shows that he is irredeemable in every form or fashion. I feel that this won't do that. Because if you are a fan of mythology, Hades got a raw deal. Hades really got a raw deal. That's Zeus true. Got the skies. Yeah. Poseidon got the waters. And your boy got the underworld. He got a raw deal. So I'm hoping it doesn't flip it too much. I'm disappointed because I would have liked to have seen what they could have done with just a genuine remake and a retelling of what we had already seen. Because Hercules, the cartoon movie, is fantastic. I can already imagine who's going to play Phil or Meg or just so many thick roles. Now, I think the most important thing that matters now is casting. Because if Hades is going to be the person who's telling the story, who's going to be Hades?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm not invested in it because I just don't like the live action Disney remakes. But I could see taking a chance doing this from the villain's perspective, kind of taking a different stance on it. But again, if it ain't broke, why fix it? That sort of thing. But Tony, you got any thoughts on the Hercules live action and going in a little bit of a different direction here as far as the focal point of things?
Not really. It's not a big part of my fandom. I'm here for it for people that are looking forward to it. But other than that, I mean, I'm not super excited. We can
James Woods played Hades. Hades. James Wood is he's persona non grata now. I have an idea for Hades. An older guy, but just thinking about the volatility of the personality. John Malkovich.
Yeah, that'd work. Yeah, absolutely. Or maybe Willem Dafoe. That might not be bad.
Oh, if they could get Willem Dafoe. They could get Willem Dafoe. My God. Only problem is he's not tall.
No, that's... But...
But you could make that... Tom Hardy is 5'8" and he played Bane.
Camera
you can
angles,
make it work.
Camera angles are everything. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. I'll be kind of curious to see who they cast for that. But I want to move into the bigger story here that you also shared, Ray. We got the first synopsis for the Fantastic Four First Steps movie, which Ray despises. But I'm going to read it anyway. Then I will read Ray's retort and let him comment on it. So here is a synopsis.
Am I the villain of the show today? Am I playing the role of Patrick?
I'm not going to boo you. I refuse to boo you, mainly because you can't hear it anyway. Tony can make the decision whether he wants to boo you or not, but he looks very kind of like
contemplative.
The cat that swallowed the canary sort of thing. He's thinking about it. He's...
I've heard that sound before, but I don't know what it is.
It's foreign. Yeah, it's definitely foreign. It's like a foreign sound.
Was that rain? Is that rain? Is that what that sound is? There we go.
All right. Let's get into this synopsis for the Fantastic Four movie, and we can discuss how excited we are, or in one of our cases, despise the whole thing. Set against the vibrant backdrop of a 1960s-inspired retro-futuristic world, the Fantastic Four First Steps introduces Marvel's first family. Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, Sue Storm, Invisible Woman, Johnny Storm, Human Torch, and Ben Grimm, The Thing, as they face their most daunting challenge yet. Forced to balance their roles as heroes with the strength of their family bond, they must defend Earth from a ravenous space god called Galactus, being played by Ralph Ineson, and his enigmatic herald Silver Surfer, Julia Garner. And if Galactus's plan to devour the entire planet and everyone on it weren't bad enough, it suddenly gets very personal. Now, the last sentence has me intrigued. What are we talking about? Getting very personal. Ray despises this idea. And I'm going to read Ray's, if you'll allow me to indulge you. Ray does not like this idea at all. And his response was, I think the idea of throwing Galactus and the damn Silver Surfer essentially away in the first movie is a tragedy. The Avengers should be fighting Galactus. I just think it's an absolute waste of a god-level villain, especially in the kinda origin movie. And my thing about this, before I turn it back to Ray to defend himself, well, not really defend himself, but just to justify himself, it does seem like we are bypassing the origin story, although I'm sure we will get it in a massive flashback at the beginning of this, because yes, a lot of people know who the Fantastic Four is. No, we don't need an origin story because that creates too many problems. So let's just kind of recap where they got their powers and move on. I think the concern that Ray, that you have here is that are you concerned that Galactus is going to go the route of Ultron in this thing where we just throw away this god level villain at the very beginning of this whole thing and that's it for him? It's a one off sort of thing, because I don't think they're going to do that with Galactus and certainly not Silver Surfer. But why are you in this mindset, Raymond S. Cashington Esquire, the 452nd?
Well, so I think I have been the biggest proponent and defender of the MCU on this panel for the better part of my tenure on the show.
Certainly the last 2 years. Absolutely.
Okay. I appreciate that. Yes. So with that being said, and not particularly from you gentlemen, but all over, one of the biggest complaints I've had to hear was Marvel has a villain problem. So many of the villains are inverses of the heroes, or so many of the villains who are really cool and have great stories are then done, ended, killed, jailed, and never seen again. We have a villain problem. So when you look at the listing of Marvel's rogues gallery, if you will, there are probably, realistically, off the top of my head, 8 to 10 people or entities that you can consider that realistically would, like, we're not the one above all is not going to be on Marvel, right? We're not going to go that far. Realistically, I think there are only 8 to 10 villain entities that can be put in the movies as an Avengers level team-up level villain. You feel me? The Fantastic Four, while they are a group, are not a team-up because they are one entity. Okay? So, throwing Galactus, who I acknowledge is particularly a Fantastic Four villain. I acknowledge that. And his herald, the Silver Surfer. Mind you, this isn't Norrin Rad. This is the wife. Throwing those entities in the introductory movie of the Fantastic Four, because you know the Fantastic Four ain't going to lose and die. It's the first time we see them, right? So it just, you comparing it to Ultron is probably a little more on the nose than I want to acknowledge, because I love Ultron and I'm a big proponent of that movie. And I don't think he's gone. But I can't in good faith acknowledge that if people believe we have a villain problem, then we're throwing God tier level villains away. Like, in the same breath, people will say, oh, this is dope, and then complain about Gore the God Butcher and what happened to him. Like, Gore the God Butcher was a legendary-style villain played excellently by Christian Bale. We'll never see him again. It's a tragedy, as good as he was. If we see that with Galactus, who was created to be the ender of the universe, and then the Fantastic Four, we've never seen before in this world, in this universe, in this cinematic spectrum, just beat my boy first time out the gate. I just don't think it's right. But in the same breath, Arishem over here got all these movies better to him, and we think he the biggest baddest dude in the world. Galactus will watch Arishem, bro. So that's my only concern about it. That I'm just very bothered by that.
I'll let Tony go before I kind of retort a little.
I mean, I was just gonna say, here's the thing, you know, Ray, your concerns are valid, right? 100%. Like, I don't want to see that happen at all. There's got to be a chance, though, that they're slow rolling it in the first movie with you know, Galactus and the Silver Surfer. Maybe, like, we just have more interaction with the Silver Surfer leading to the introduction of Galactus at the end of the first movie. Like, we haven't told what the intricacies of the storyline have been yet, right? And you talk about Galactus being an Avenger level thing. Like, Galactus doesn't necessarily have to be defeated. Galactus could just have Earth defended from Galactus, right? And come still back around, tie everything back in down the line. I know that's a lot of booking by Tunney, if you want to make a wrestling reference, but at the same time, I hope that's the case, more so than your fears being executed, unfortunately, or coming to life.
Let me tell you why I don't think it is. Because if that's what it is, I'll be fine with that. I'll tell you why I don't think it is. They've casted Galactus and they've announced Galactus is in the movie as that character. The two times we've seen way you booked it was the first time we saw Thanos. Thanos was not listed in the character list. He was just a post-credit scene guy. The other time was Dormammu, and Dormammu, to this day, if you look at it, it is not listed as who Dormammu is in the listing. So when they do it that way, that shows me in my brain that this is an allusion to something later on, but he's not integral to this movie. When you literally put the character in the synopsis with the character's name and the person playing his name, it tells me he's important to this movie. And that's what bothers me. Now, I'm cool if Galactus sends a herald and they fight the herald. All right, we could have the conversation. That's not what the synopsis says.
So my thought on this is two parts. I think it's presumptuous to think that Galactus is just a one and done. I think they may just be introducing a larger threat. And all that Reed and these guys do is keep him at bay, get the Silver Surfer involved in some form or fashion and kind of set the stage for that. The other thing I think is, when you're talking the Fantastic Four, and I know this is the first movie, but you're talking a movie in a franchise that has failed twice before. So if you're going to do them and introduce them, and I know there was like speculation about Mole Man. And remember when you mentioned that, Ray, and I was adamantly against that, because I'm like, no, you can't start the Fantastic Four with a villain the level of Mole Man. It's got to be Doom or Galactus, because You've got to grab the audience's attention right away and distinguish this franchise as something different. So they're kind of in a tough spot. You're not going to bring in Doom, because we've got to establish that through the multiverse and get Robert Downey Jr. involved. So, you know, is it a risk to bring in Galactus? If it's not done right, yeah. If it's the typical story where, you know, Reed gets like the negative beam or whatever the hell it was that nullified Galactus in the comics, or whatever he's going to do to kind of satiate Galactus's eternal hunger for life force, then, you know, maybe we get something like that. But I'm okay with this as long as it is not a one and done. I mean, if you're going to take Ultron's one thing, and I agree with you, I think that the way they did Ultron was just like, he's just a stopgap for Thanos. That doesn't make much sense. Galactus should not be considered a stopgap for Doctor Doom, because Galactus is, look, like you said, he would wipe the floor with Arishem. If Thanos doesn't have the Infinity Gauntlet, he's no match for Galactus. The only thing that saves him from Galactus and the rest of the Eternals is, or the Celestials, excuse me, is the Infinity Gauntlet, at least in the comics. But yeah, you can't, a threat like Galactus is, I agree, Ray, something that is, should bring everybody in the entirety of the MCU together to confront him. So if you are going to one-off him, that's a travesty. I agree with you, but I can't see them doing that.
I know we're running short on time. Let me give you two quick retorts. Number one, I give the Ultron situation a bit more of a pass because of the time we did it in.
Yeah.
Because if the Ultron thing happened in 1995 or in 2003, it wouldn't come the same way, because we know the technology is so different. They were able to fight him off effectively.
Let me jump in real quick. The other problem with Ultron is they didn't have the rights to the characters they needed to really tell that story.
That too. Yes, that's a great point. My second thing is, while I don't think Mole Man would have been a great choice, the MCU has shown regularly and repeatedly that the first villain they fight is usually someone that's whack. Ironmonger, while he's not whack in no sense of the imagination, the Vulture, like Ronan, like these guys aren't major people. Darren Cross, what was he? Yellow Jacket. Yeah. Like a lot of the time, the first guys these dudes fight aren't a big deal, and it's done that way to show. I know he fought Loki, but the executioner thing,
oh, the Destroyer.
Destroyer. A lot of the reason they do that is to show, one, they're still figuring out who they are, still learning their powers, and two, it's no different than Dave. You're married, Tunny. You're married to all 16 of your cats. When you take out your lady friend the first time, I'm sorry, I love you, Tunny. When you take out your lady friend for the first time, you don't want to take her to a $500 steakhouse the first time. You want to build up to that point. So that's why I think you can't start at the top. There's nowhere to go.
Well, as Tony's reminding us, we got to keep this rolling, Ray. So we're not going to talk much more about Galactus.
I've got in trouble.
Because we both got in trouble. Because, you know, I mean, not that this is going to be a competitive game today, but Tony's stressed.
What else is there? Say, you guys just talked about it for like 94 minutes.
Well, we enjoy the conversation, Tony. Yeah, I apologize to you.
Let's bitch about Star Wars before we get out of here, though, because we got two stories that broke this week. One of them, on the one hand, says Rey's going to be the focal point of it, not Ray Cash. Ray, Daisy Ridley is going to be the
Skywalker.
Focal court.
Yeah,
Rey Skywalker of all these upcoming movies. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. So now we have a direction. We know that Rey's going to be involved in all these properties. She's considered, quote, the most valuable player for the Star Wars universe going forward. And then a few days later, we get the announcement that there will be no Star Wars movie in December of 2026. They've removed that from the calendar. Everybody, again, calling for Kathleen Kennedy's head on a spike, which, you know, I mean, we don't really need to do that, but maybe figuratively, career-wise, yes. I've been saying that for a while. And I talked to DJ. I said it last week. I will say it again this week. Star Wars needs a central figure, one person in charge to coordinate all this shit, because this is just burning people out. You say on the one hand, you giveth, and on the other hand, you taketh away. Rey's going to be the MVP for all this shit that's never going to come out. Tony, is it all Star Wars or is it all just fucked up?
I mean, we all laughed collectively when I put that in there that they had canceled that date, yes. Right? It was like, okay, like the shitstorm just continues. I mean, if Favreau's up for it, let's just put him in charge. I mean, someone or someone like him, because look what happens when you get the right person with Feige and hopefully with Gunn here. You have someone with a deep, deep respect for the original material that has a clear path moving forward of what they would like to tell as a story from their experiences of being a fan for so long and relating to everything else that they've done inside the industry. We need someone that's proven in the industry, that's a fan of this Star Wars, you know, main lore, to come in and execute it properly. The things we haven't seen, the things we still want to see.
And it's not an easy job, and I grant that, because there's a lot of source material you can draw from with the extended universe and all this other stuff. So it is not, it, it is, I mean, I know we don't think about it this way, and I'll turn it over to Ray real quick. But Star Wars is as vast a sort of material as DC or Marvel is at this point, isn't it? I mean, in that, when yes. you've got something that's that big to manage, you really need one person who, like Tunney says, is familiar with the lore, is familiar with all the stories, and can pull all this stuff together and draw from. Kathleen Kennedy's not the answer. I don't think, I'm not even sure she's ever read a Star Wars comic, played a Star Wars game. She's probably watched the movies, and that's about it. She clearly wasn't watching The Acolyte, because if she was, she'd been like, oh, wait, let's not put this shit out, because there's a problem here. She was asleep at the wheel on that. But Ray, what do you think, man? I mean, Star Wars just continues to shoot themselves in the ass every other week at this point.
I don't think they appreciate the depth of what it can be, but they didn't appreciate the depth of what the MCU could be until Feige showed, like, they got to the Avengers and showed what it could be. I'm with Tunney, but I don't think it should be Favreau. I know it was your idea originally, Dave. They need a helm. Shouldn't be Favreau. I think it should be Dave Filoni.
Yeah.
Well, somebody. I mean, I just use him as an example because of the, you know, the extensive
right.
list of so things, Favreau, his connection with the Mandalorian, you know.
Well, Filoni is the guy that created it.
Yeah.
Right.
Filoni's done Rebels. He did Clone Wars. He's done all this stuff. So he is as immersed as anybody in what's going on right now. And stuff that actually has worked, you know, Mandalorian. Right. Rebels.
There's a question to be asked there too, right? Exactly. Why hasn't he been put in charge then?
Because somebody in Disney thinks that we need all these different visions and all these different directors and all these different people involved to tell different stories. No, you don't need that anymore because it's just hurting the overall product. You need one person with one vision who can pull all these different parts. You want to bring in different directors? That's fine. Feige doesn't direct any of this MCU shit. He's just the fucking steering wheel. He's the rudder on the ship saying, go here, bring in this piece. Here's the story. Here's how we're bringing it together. That's what Star Wars needs, right?
Spot on.
Yeah, here's the places on the map we want to hit.
Yeah.
Let me know how you want to do that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day in Alderaan until it's not. So, yeah. So anyway, that's kind of where we're going to cut out of here. I will say one thing. You know, normally we do what you're watching. I think all of us like watch the same thing on Friday night, right? Which was Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul. 60 million households got it. Netflix's inability to handle numbers like that was exposed. They've got some work to do before Raw debuts in January. You guys
mainly before NFL here coming up.
Are they going to do NFL?
Oh yeah,
too?
Christmas. They got Christmas.
Christmas. Yeah, I mean that was that was huge. That let them know that they need to be more prepared for coming up. I would be way less worried about Raw and SmackDown. Yeah,
Raw's not going to get 60 million.
Raw would be lucky to have 5 million people tune into the first night.
They would love have 5 million people. Yeah, I don't see it happening. But you guys got any thoughts on the fight before we cut out of here? Other than it was bullshit, Ray.
I love that Mike got that money, 58 mm-hmm. years old, for him to do what he did. It was a terrible fight, but we knew it was going to be terrible. Jake Paul is a much better fighter than he showed. I think he didn't want to hurt the guy. You could see from round one, my boy's legs were shaking. It was a terrible idea for a fight, but Mike got 20 mil. So good for him. If I can throw just a couple things out, I promise honey, it's going to be 30 seconds. Number one, WBD made a deal with the NBA. Inside the NBA will now be licensed to ESPN, but they'll still be TNT employees. That's amazing. That's huge, especially for Ernie Johnson, who's been with Turner his whole life, his dad was with Turner his whole life. Good for them. Number two, Cobra Kai Part 2 came out. Check that out. It's fantastic. Number three, I went to the movies and saw Heretic with Hugh Grant. That man is a terrifying human being.
Is that the one where the girls are in like the maze or something? Is that the
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We watched a trailer for that a while ago. Tony, you got any thoughts about the fight or anything else that you want to recommend to people?
It was a work, but when's the last time America got together for a boxing spectacle? So that's kind of cool. Maybe some way, form, or fashion, we can find a way to make boxing a little bit better, but it's a long road to hoe there. Good for them. Good for Netflix having to learn what their need for live streaming sports. I've been watching the same shows, but I did yesterday afternoon watch late afternoon. I went back and watched Tombstone again with Kurt Russell.
I'll be your Huckleberry, Tunney, anytime, baby.
A bunch of great people in there. I forget the guy's name who played Ike Clanton in there, but he is probably the most underrated in the execution of his role in that movie. Just an American Western classic.
Yeah, I think, you know, my thoughts on the fight were like you guys. I think Jake carried him. I think, you know, where was the Mike Tyson in training? You know, the 58-year-old guy who would look like he was in training. I mean, there's a moment where Tyson hits him early in the fight and then kind of backs off. So, you know, a lot of people are saying Mike carried Jake and didn't really press the issue. I don't know. I tend to think that it was Jake who carried him, you know, that sort of thing. But, yeah, I think, like you said, Tony, the one main thing to take away from this, a big night for boxing. It's been a long, long decades since that many people tuned in for anything boxing related. And they got to see the women's match was a fucking war with a shitty decision.
Oh, yeah.
That was a hell. And if you haven't watched women's boxing before, that was massive for women's boxing. Whatever the Straight Tyson up. Paul thing was, it was huge for women's boxing. Only thing, other thing I'll say is if you want a fun time and watch government officials being lied to by their own government, watch the UAP hearing from this last week. You will see some dumb shit like you quickly become aware. These Congress people realize they're being lied to by their own government in the middle of this whole thing. And it's fascinating to watch. But anyway, that's just me. But that is going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Tunney's got to watch the Packers kick the shit out of the Patrick Chicago Bears. Ray's going to watch, hopefully, his Ravens take down the Steelers. I don't have anything to do because the Commanders already shit the bet against the Eagles. But wait, I'm a Ravens fan now. I forgot. But thank you. Let's get out of here. We'll go around the horn. Tony, where can people check you out on all the great social media outlets that you hang out at?
Follow me at PC Tony.
Or at Chuck Snow. He's still around in certain places. So, you know, you can't discount Chuck. Ray Mendez Cashington Esquire, the 4092nd. Where can people check you out on social media? Should they so be inclined?
I'll be a PC Tony.
Okay. That's right. And as far as I'm concerned, you could follow me on Twitter at It's Me DPP. And, you know, that's all we got. No. Follow me at AttitudeAg, Facebook.com/AttitudeOfAggression, at Attitude of Aggression, all one word on Instagram and Threads. And of course, check out the show at Bandwagon Nerds on Twitter or X or whatever it is. That's all we got this week, guys. So that's going to do it for this episode. Till next week, Patrick will be back. We'll see what happens with the next episode of Game 7. But you've been listening to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, right here on thechairshot.com.
Good morning, Vietnam!
Try to lift it over Hextall. 2:35 left in the third. One goal. That's all that separates these two. Anderson and Messi again. Anderson.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.